woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Half time hour. It's Matt Weber on the board. We're looking for a bouncer this morning. S&P futures up 21. NASDAQ futures up 188. Dow futures up 93. There's an early review this morning, which we don't normally do. Remember yesterday, S&Ps were down 95. NASDAQ down 465. Dow Jones down 632. So the NASDAQ had a 10% correction in 3 days. And its top six stocks lost $1 trillion in market value. So we could use a little bounce. What do you think, Kevin? A little bounce?
Well, yeah. We've been talking about the market not being rational. But it appears that every now and then it comes to its senses.
Well, it was racing up awful fast, and some stocks were seemingly on autopilot, and they were just racing up, and now all of a sudden, but you wonder the timing of these things that happens. I always think in terms of trading and what pieces of information that I would have liked to have had. I surely would have liked to have known that a couple of firms were going to raise their margin requirements on Tesla, and that they were going to somehow screw up, in some cases, the Apple split. You can send margin requirements out there because they managed to screw that up. I mean, that to me, I would have found a way to get short Tesla if I'd have known that, just saying. So whenever I think of that, I'm thinking somebody with access to the stuff, I don't see any morality at all today, really. So if somebody could, they would. It's my thinking, you know. I mean, there were stories of 9/11 that as the planes hit the towers and people were scared for their lives, the last thing they did before they flew out of their office was sell spoos, right?
I shouldn't laugh. That's not, but yeah, probably.
So I mean, it's the last thing. I'm talking about in the towers themselves, but across the street, seeing what's happened when you didn't know it was going to land on you. You hit the sell spoo key and off you went, right? People aren't going to change, I don't think, much as we'd like them to. Just saying. Real quick, Manny and I were talking about it on the way in. What do you think happens in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 if the ACC and the SEC manage to have somewhat of an okay season and those guys didn't play? They're not really going to try and play by themselves in the spring, are they?
People are mad at them.
Are we talking about a lynch mob for the commissioner, or what are we talking?
That would be kind of interesting. I don't think the stories are being told in their entirety about how they're coming to these decisions. So I'm not sure. I keep reading these little snippets is that, you know, it's governors getting in the way. And they're just saying that, you know, absolutely not. We won't allow this to go on. Not that they really should be able to necessarily have a vote on it, but they do. And so I don't know how much of that is political, how much of this is driven by university presidents. I doubt it's driven by athletics directors because this is just crushing their budgets.
Yeah, I don't know how you let...
So unless they're the world's most altruistic people who are true believers that this is dangerous. But because everything's so bloated anyway, you know, we've looked at that before. The number of employees in athletics departments, you know, it's worse than a bank with all its officers and assistant vice presidents and such. The number of associate athletic directors and assistant athletic directors and assistant associate athletic directors and all, you know, all those titles that people have, you know, there's so many managers in an athletics organization.
I'm going to say too many.
And it's, you know, I look at it from a business consultant standpoint. If you ask me to go in and say, what are we going to do? And I said, well, the first thing we're going to do is fix your friggin' organization chart because you're way out of line on this.
Yeah, you do wonder, and I don't know how you. Of course, these people don't seem to have any thought of one decision coming apart with another, coming with another. I mean, if you let Detroit play with no people in the stands, the Tigers, how do you not let Michigan? I mean, I don't know. And what is this? What is
the
story?
And you know what's going to happen with the Lions, right?
Well, yeah.
Why is this different? You know, and I suppose you could make the argument that we'll let someone else, you know, go first and step on any landmines that are there, and then we'll follow on. But you know, I don't know. I don't know how to make sense out of any of this. As I said in an email recently, the only thing that we've done well throughout this pandemic is implement bad policies.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it doesn't seem to be getting any better. Which is, I mean, I was out. If I didn't like the governor before, I sure don't like him now. As I was getting eaten alive by mosquitoes outside at this restaurant Saturday night. Oh, is that fair to blame him for the mosquitoes? I think so.
Yes, absolutely. or for the discomfort and not having an option for anything else.
Yeah, I don't
know what it's the Republican side is just as bad on this in their own way. They may not be imposing the same draconian rules, but you know, Indiana has shifted into, you know, full stop from where they were, you know, and has not continued on. And there's still a statewide mask mandate. You're supposed to wear a mask anytime you go in. You know, why is it that way? Well, there's an election coming up. The governor's up for re-election. He would not want to make a decision that might blow up on him, but he certainly doesn't want to make a decision that that is going to alienate a large voting base, the people who do believe that masks are really important and feel threatened by all this. And so he's not going to go. Now, on November 4th, there might be a lifting of everything. But, you know, that's the Republican side of the equation. Different example. In Wisconsin, the mayor's a Democrat, and Governor Evers reissued about a month ago, I think, a new emergency declaration, which he doesn't get a second bite at that apple, by the way. It has to go to the legislature. But he issued a new emergency declaration and then used that as his basis for issuing a mask mandate now. And just by calculation, because clearly the Republicans could sue that, take it to court, and win, just like they have won in the past when battling with their governor over some of these COVID restrictions, and they have made the political decision, and it's based on two things. But the part one is that they don't want they are concerned about what I just described. They don't want to alienate the mask proponents right before the election, so they're just going to let it slide for now. Part two is that also about two thirds of the county officials have said we're not enforcing that, so it doesn't matter anyway.
Well, that's definitely. But I just, I mean, I don't want anybody to get this thing, which everybody knows by now. I hope. I don't understand how the governor could. I don't. When you have no control over any of these tests, and you have no idea what the numerator is or why people are showing up, and if you did this properly, and people like saw a doctor or something before they. To find out what was wrong with them, I mean, in terms of if they were feeling poorly, if they did this properly, you would have the only people that got tests were the people who pretty much had the virus, right? So your percentage of people positive tests should actually be higher if you did it right. And that's the way I look at it. I mean, the idea of just have random amounts of
sure,
people show up.
You would only be testing people with symptoms.
Yeah, and or in this particular case with this particular disease. People are contagious before they have symptoms, and some people never get symptoms. So it is different. But still, you don't want to be a slave to...
No, it's not. I mean, SARS was like that, too.
I don't know about that. I think if you had SARS, you knew it. I don't think there are too many people with SARS sitting an hour at home. I think you were at the doctor. Anyway.
You knew it. It was serious.
Yeah.
But the point is that, you know, it behaved the same way, though. If you had, you would have the virus before you showed symptoms.
Right. Well, I guess that happens just about anything. I mean, even with a cold,
yeah.
I suppose. But anyway, he decides that there's a little spike in Will County. He has no idea where it's coming from. Like, doesn't care. But just whatever the testing spot is there, I mean, in my opinion, the dude has no idea. But they keep falling back on, even though this might have happened at a Little League game, that there was a big spreader. Their playbook is to close bars and restaurants. Doesn't matter what it is. Without any regard to, yet, Will County has a whole bunch of restaurants, and Orland is right next door and has even more. So, when you close the people in Will County for 2 weeks, and I'm sure that Jay has no clue, since he's never run anything in his life, he has no clue what that even means. What do? Take all your produce and either hand it to people that are going home, or do you throw it all out, right? So you lay people off for 2 weeks. Now, what does that do with the unemployment? Can you get unemployment for 2 weeks? I mean, now we're not getting...
Well, by the time they process it, you might be back at work.
Right. So now, do you really believe that it's only going to be 2 weeks? So after 10 days, do you run out and buy all the stuff again and tell people to come back, or do you wait until the guy says something? Meanwhile, everybody's just going over to Orland. So what have you accomplished?
And also, meanwhile, we have disrupted supply chains. So if you don't order with a lot of lead time, then you may wind up waiting even when you can reopen.
Yeah, the thing that we don't seem, and this is across all lines. To me, the enemy here is incompetence, and the idea that somebody else is doing it, I need to do it. You know, which is, I don't I mean I, but it absolutely is affecting. Business. I don't even, Dennis, Kevin, I don't know how it's going to, I know it's going to, but I can't tell you how the hell people not paying mortgages, 7.1% of the mortgages in the country didn't get paid last month. That's a lot. And I think it's only going higher, especially now that we're dropping this $600 a week thing, or we did drop it. So I mean, the idea of this sort of an from the ground up depression, I'll use the term. I've never seen anything. I mean, I don't even know how to look for it. I mean, I'm supposed to be an economist, right? I mean, I know it's there. It's simmering underneath these big numbers. But how's it going to pop out? I mean, just one of these months we're going to have a crummy sales number? Or, I mean, what? I don't even know what to look for here. Do you?
Look for it to determine what?
Well, I'm just saying, the stock market this week has made a correction, so we were looking at the stock market and saying everything was okay. But now, what exactly is going to tell somebody with the numbers that we stare at, not the numbers that are really there? I mean, if you really look at the amount of people that are still out of work and not paying this and blah, 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 you can probably get a pretty good idea. But my point is, what is the number that's going to hit that says, we've decided that down whatever we were in the GDP, 13%, well, that was okay, because, you know, God, it could, the expectations were 13.5%. All right. what sense that white. Makes? I don't. You know, somebody walked across the street and got hit by a bus and lost both legs. The predictions were he's going to lose both legs and one arm. He did pretty good. No, it's not how that works. But I mean, I'm looking for what number are we going to see to where everybody realizes, hey, things aren't as good as people say they are. You know, and I've got people that work for various parts of government that are planning on being off for like 2 years. Not off, but working from home for 2 years. There's firms now that are talking June of 2022, they're coming back. I mean, all these buildings, I mean, they're not going to keep paying these rents. And if they're not paying the rent, the building's not paying their mortgage. And if they're not paying the mortgage, what are these tax bills going to look like? And you know,
And what are the other implications going to be, Tom? I mean,
that's what I'm stumbling to find out here.
Even if we believe this all saved lives, when are we going to start counting the delayed cancer treatments? When are we going to, or heart disease or diabetes treatments and diagnoses? When are we going to start counting, suicides related to financial despair from the lockdowns or mental despair? When are we going to, drug overdoses from all of that? When are we going to start counting all of that?
We don't seem like we're capable of it. Yet, when people drive, the thought of lowering the speed limit, you get all kinds of arguments. What do you mean? It's going to be, if people are stuck in traffic another, 400 lifetimes, it's okay if you lose 395 people because you've gained 5 lifetimes worth of time. And that's the rationale there. And yet, look at the logic between the traffic stuff and the way we're dealing with COVID, and it's light years difference.
Yeah. So what you've described is the inability to recognize the entire system and to just focus in on one piece.
Right.
We aren't looking. What's the upstream problems that we cause? What are the downstream problems that we cause? What are the inconsistencies from one place to the next? And Are they necessary or inconsistencies, or are they random inconsistencies that are doing more damage than they are good?
Well, you look at the difference in governance, and I look at myself, and I have a, I don't know why, but I still have an interest in pretty much everything that everybody does in terms of their business. I don't know where I ever got that and why I still have it, but I do. I mean, nothing is more enjoyable to me than to sit down and have somebody sit next to me if I'm watching a Cub game and all of a sudden they tell me they own a restaurant and we talk about the economics of the restaurant business for an hour and a half and I learn something I never knew. I mean, to me, I like that. And obviously, you do too. You wouldn't be teaching school and all kinds of stuff. I just wonder when we have people that are, quote, in charge. I mean, I don't think Lori Lightfoot's ever had that conversation. And, not that I want to be mayor. I mean, I sure as hell don't. But I mean,
I wouldn't understand it anyway.
But I'm saying, there's no intellectual curiosity here. And I look at one of the people I've read the most about was Roosevelt. Roosevelt's mind was like an absolute sieve. He would have people in his office, a sponge.
Sieve
is what we used to call the goalies.
I think that's Biden's mind.
No, remember what we used to call the goalies that when we went to the hockey game at Notre Dame? Sieve! Matty, how would you like that if you were a goalie and have 5 idiots behind you yelling sieve? But that's what he did. He had people from every walk of life, like every half hour, come into the Oval Office and just let them talk and figure out what's with your industry, what's the best thing I can do for you, what's the worst thing, and just learned all about how all this stuff worked. It's not all that obvious to everybody how an economy works, for God's sake. And it's not all that obvious that in a restaurant that you think is busy, that if everybody doesn't order a second bottle of wine or order dessert, you don't make any money on that table, given your fixed cost. If you knew that, the idea of saying, hey, you're okay now, put 25% of the people in there, you would never make such an ignorant statement. Because it's ignorant. I mean, stone cold is. Am I right, Matty? Your brother's in the restaurant business.
It's definitely almost impossible to survive at this rate.
Yeah. I mean, what would the number have to be? 75, maybe. That's if you raise your prices.
Yeah.
I mean,
at best, anybody is just staying alive here and hoping for things to change before they die.
Yeah,
before the restaurant dies.
So, I mean, when you have people making these decisions like that, gee, there's 1,000 restaurants in Orland. Do you think people are just going to drive an extra mile if they want to go out and get out of Will County? Oh, didn't think about that. Well, duh. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. You're the governor, for God's sake.
Yeah, New York is dealing with that now, too.
Is that true?
Heck, New Jersey's dealing with it. Was it New Jersey or Pennsylvania? I don't remember which it was, a governor, a mayor, or somebody that, you know, has a mandate, a restaurant mandate. So what did he do? He went to Maryland for dinner and was, of course, busted. Video, showing him enjoying himself, no mask, no none of that. You know, all of the rules he's imposed at his own place. Not in play when he goes to Maryland himself.
Okay, well, what about, I mean, Kenny was saying, I didn't realize that de Blasio was talking about no internal dining until next June. I had no idea he was planning on going to winter without, I mean, every time I go to New York, I see restaurants with 10 tables, and they're all little places, and it's nothing like here. I mean, how the hell is that place going to make it to June? Or you just want to turn all the? I mean, do these guys own stock in like McDonald's or what?
I don't understand that rationale. Even if you think that's a possibility, even if you think that is something that might have to happen, why would you say it? Why would you make that determination now, when it's a determination that you can make? You know, you can make determinations to extend a month from now, 2 months from now, 3 months from, you know, whatever it is. Why would he be talking about that now? He's either the world's dumbest man, which I would not rule out that possibility, or there is something else at play here, and you know, Lord knows what it is. Whether it is a financial interest elsewhere, whether it's I don't know. I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine the stupidity of saying something like that.
But. These people must understand. I don't. Maybe they don't, but they must understand that if it's the Matty Weber and Kevin hot dog place or hamburger place indoors, and I say, and you guys are your fixed cost is $20,000 a month, all right, and I mean, your place has been doing well for a while, so you've got $100,000 in the bank. So I say to you guys, all right, you're closed for 3 months, and then we're going to be okay, all right? And then you say, all right, well, we've made $100,000 here. We can do this. We'll sell a couple of carry-out guys, but by and large, we're pissing away $20,000 a month, and that'll put us with 40 left after 3 months. And if we have to, we can go out and we could probably make 5 or 6 months if we go out on our credit card. The last thing you want to do to you guys is after 3 months say, another 3 months. Or another 5 months, because now you're toast. And if you just would have said it was a year in the first place, you'd have closed the place up and gone with your $100,000. You'd be way better off. You can't do this 15 days. No, make it 30, make it 45, make it 90. That is, you might as well not only stab somebody but start twisting the knife. But why don't these people get that?
I don't know, and I'd also say that anybody who has ever been an advocate for government, you know, an inclination for government to be the solution to various problems, is now getting a full dose of what it's like for government to be the solution and to see itself as the solution and to see itself as the only solution, and how out of control it has spun.
That
is what bureaucracies do.
I think, Kevin, there is a place for this. When you say government,
there is a place for government. There is not a place for government as the solution.
Okay, but I guess where I'm going with this is, most of the time during our lifetime and surely our parents' lifetime, a main part of government works fine. Every time you go to the bus stop, the bus driver's there, man or woman, they're pleasant, they drive the bus, they don't crack the thing up every day. The post office guy, the guy who comes to my place, is the nicest guy on earth. He never misses anything. He's always there. I mean, there's if you drop a 50 cents on a thing, 2 days later it shows up in Alaska. I'll tell you what, lately it seems like the post office, everything's taking like a week or two everywhere, even in the city. But that's another, I don't know what's going on there. But and by and large, there have been parts of government that are run properly. I mean, what did they in the original Bourne Identity? You know, what did the guy say? You know, service to your country used to be a real job and used to be an honorable profession. And now it's just not. I mean, to be an antitrust attorney, I think it at one time was a real job. Now, what do? You just dodge stuff and you mess with a person so you'll work for them when you're out. I mean, the revolving, somehow we really bleeped this up. And why can't somebody be a garbage truck driver and do a good job and have it be an honorable profession? I don't get it. Why all of a sudden it has to be?
It's good work and important work, and a lot of that's done in the private sector, by the way. But
yeah,
the point with government. And I know maybe you want to go to break and
S&P futures up 22. We're trying to bounce here. Let's hope we do. This free fall is not fun. Nasdaq up 172. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Kevin O'Neill on the phone. We have Mr. Matt Weber back at the board. By the way, happy birthday. You weren't here for, did we know you when you were young?
Yeah, I guess.
When did I start playing ball with you, like 15 years ago?
Probably about 12 or 13 years ago, and I was, 24, 25, and yeah, yesterday I turned 37.
Wife still likes you. That's good. The dog still likes you. So you got everything going for you.
So far, so good.
You're from the mom. She
called I remember little Maddie in his shorts and knee socks. He was a cute kid.
Remember when Lou called him a moral relativist, and now Maddie doesn't even remember being called that.
I was just happy that I shot an 87 yesterday in the rain, and that was my best score of the year. So not a good score for some people, but for me, that was a great day.
By the way, a gentle rain makes for good scores sometimes.
It absolutely did, because you're striking the ball, and it's soft. And it's like you're playing on a PGA course. The fairways are soft. The greens are soft. Like, this is great.
That's assuming you come near the green.
Well, another story.
If we keep going from trap to trap, but they're all wet, that's not so hot. SP Futures up 20, NASDAQ Futures up 160. Very happy we're up today for a little bit, for God's sake. Dow Futures up 98. Of course, we were up 20 on Monday night before yesterday's fiasco. So who knows? Let's hope we stay there today. Europe is bouncing. DAX up 99.8%. FTSE up 38.6%. CAC around up 18.4%. Malaysia, these guys were up yesterday morning before the carnage happened over here. So today we got the Nikkei down 241, that's a full 1%. Shanghai down 61, that's 1.9%. Hang Seng not so bad, 155 down, well, it's 0.6%. Bonds, 0.68, so they haven't really moved. The Bund minus 0.49. Japan was almost up to 0.05, now they're back down to 0.026, so a little bit of a drop there. Oil is bouncing back a little bit, but he really got whacked yesterday. Up 48 cents, but only to 37.24. Ran up 25 cents to 40.03. Natural gas, 241. And that was up to 278, so that's down a bunch. RBOB, 111, so be happy to be ready to fill up the jalopy this weekend for sure. Gold, down 12.50 to 19.30. Silver down 28 cents to 26.70. But gold actually yesterday morning was 19.22, so it's actually up a little bit from them. For their copper, still over $3 at 3.01. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start on a chilly and overcast morning, and it's wet out there as well. Not raining currently, but not affecting traffic right now. If you're coming in on the Edens and Kennedy, it's nice and quiet. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are quiet. Lakeshore Drive is looking good, and the suburban tollways are quiet too. Off the expressways, we have an issue up in the northern suburbs. Route 21 at Park Avenue, which is Illinois 176. There is a crash, but everything else looking good out there. Weather today, again, lots of clouds early, more rain on and off throughout the day, similar to yesterday, just kind of a miserable weather day. We'll reach a high of 66. Right now it's overcast and 61 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a very pleasant September day in Phoenix. Sunshine with a high of 91. Right now it's clear and 69. In sports, the Cubs won their second straight, and they've won 6 out of 10 after a somewhat rough weekend against St. Louis. They're back 3 games up on the Cardinals, shutting out the Reds 3-0 last night. Alec Mills pitched a 6-inning shutout. White Sox lost last night in Pittsburgh. They were walked off by the Pirates 5-4. Sox have won 6 out of 10. But they lost last night 5-4. Diamondbacks are in last place. They were beaten by the Dodgers 10-9. So, Chief, we are entering the sprint of this 60-game season. The Cubs have 17 games left beginning today. White Sox have 18 games left. Cubs are 25-18, 3 up on the Cardinals, 5.5 up on the Brewers. The White Sox are 26-16. They're tied with the Cleveland Indians atop the AL Central, but just a half game up on the Twins, who are right on their tail. So it should be a great race in both divisions. Jake,
did you have a stat, or there is a stat somewhere, of how many people have played for the Cardinals since they came back from the COVID thing? It's their first time in the major leagues. Isn't it like 15 or something?
It's a big number. I don't know what the number is, but I heard it mentioned a few times throughout the broadcasts. And yeah, it's a lot of guys. It's like 7 or 8 pitchers alone.
Yeah, and you know what? They're not bad.
No, the Cardinals are very good, and they're right in the thick of it. They're 3 back on for the division, but the Cardinals would absolutely make the playoffs. ESPN has them as an 81% chance of making the playoffs in spite of playing, you know, so many games in such few days, trying to catch back up. And now they're 35 games in and playing good ball.
For those of you who think that you won't have to go back to work until like the COVID is totally rid of, one of the listeners sends me I get good stuff. The a man has died of bubonic plague in the U.S. After China has was sent into lockdown due to a rise in cases in Inner Mongolia. So we've had three cases of bubonic plague in New Mexico this year. Now it's been, 2,000 years, and we haven't eradicated that one, Kevin? You know, we think we're going to take care of this COVID in 6 months?
Man, will masks help?
Who knows? Total body armor. You got to wrap yourself up in aluminum foil, what I understand. But here's one. Speaking of...
Kind of kinky, actually.
Yeah, kind of kinky. Here's something that Metro Rail. Here's the thing about if you know some people that work in hospitals are going to work during the COVID. I think policemen are going to work. I think bus drivers go to work. Now the Metro, however, which is stone cold broke, the Union Pacific is refusing to send conductors into the train cars and pick up the tickets for fear of getting COVID. Right, so please don't tell me these guys are coming to work and we're paying them. Please don't tell me that. But I think the answer is we are. So let's see. You're going to come to work as the post office guy. You're afraid to deliver letters, so we're going to sit here watching a Cub game in the post office with your mask on. And by the way, we're going to pay you. Are we taking a stupid? We put stupid pills in our food or what?
You know, I think that's probably what happened. It's not COVID-19 that's killing us. It's that that release of stupid gas over the country.
Yeah, I mean, how do you not pick up the cards or the tickets? You're not going to go into the car. What does a conductor do other than do that? I'm lost myself. Anyway, Kevin, I still am looking for what numbers I'm going to look for to tell me that, things are either getting better or worse. And the ones that we keep to put out, my guess is if things don't get better, end up in some sort of a stagflation sort of thing like we were in the early 80s. And that was awful. It was really awful. And Maddie, obviously you don't, but it was, you couldn't get anywhere, could you, Kevin? You could not get ahead.
No, you definitely couldn't because no growth and price increases.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does that work?
Well,
not very well.
Not very well. And so I don't.
Hey, just to sew up the point I was making before the break, and it's really this simple: is that you see politics in corporations. You see, first of all, politics can be healthy. In other words, as you debate priorities and scarce resources and how you're going to, are we going to allocate funds to, investment in operations? Are we going to spend it on marketing? All those kinds of discussions are political discussions, essentially. And they're important. And in the healthy sense of the word, that's what corporate politics are. But, probably just about everybody we know has, and all of our listeners have probably experienced really dysfunctional political behavior in businesses. And eventually, that seems to wash itself out. It doesn't perpetuate very well for very long because at some point, it costs the business. It makes it... It makes it too expensive to run. It makes it, things don't get done. All of those things that just undermine the profitability of the business. Not so in government. Politics, in the worst sense of the word, is standard operating procedure throughout very much of government. Certainly, once you get above the people that you described, the person delivering your mail or the person driving the bus, once you get into the ranks of management and how all of that unfolds, you get politics in the unhealthy sense of the word unchecked.
I'm going to say we'll try and wrap this somewhat together if it's possible. I think when you leave certain levels, clearly on the trading floor when every man was for himself, really, in the pit, and there were 350 people there, it was amazingly competitive. Now, if you look at PTI Securities, I mean, we're very competitive to other firms. I mean, if if, you know, everybody's going to catch us a break one day if the phone doesn't ring for five rings or something, you don't pick it up. But maybe even 2 days because they know us and like us. But by and large, if you call here for a week and nobody picks up the phone, you're going to say, what the hell's with these guys, you know, type of thing. Clearly, there's a competitive aspect at certain levels. And I honestly believe, Kevin, when you and I were younger, even though politics may have been crooked, it was fairly efficient in the sense that, I mean, guys like Mayor Daley knew that your garbage guys picked up the garbage. And, I mean, it, like he used to say, you know, good government is good politics. But somewhere along the line, the government gets too big to fail, and they keep adding layers. You see it clearly in the school board. You see it clearly in the, you know, when I was a janitors at various schools, there are two guys and one janitress in a pretty good sized building. It wasn't, you really couldn't have done it with one person and you didn't need four. Well, all of a sudden they managed to screw that up. So now there's an outside firm that provides the janitors, and why you needed that, I have no idea. I mean, every school had, based on its size, I never was in one that had like 30 guys that didn't need them. I mean, there were two people, and I got hired in the summer because there would be summer school going on, and I would be the guy to clean the place because the other guys were doing their normal stuff, taking care of the kids. I mean, the stuff kids do every day. I mean, so it was that. There wasn't any rank inefficiency there. And I could tell you stories about ordering stuff, and people ordered stuff they didn't need just to keep their budget. I mean, there's always that kind of stuff that went on. But by and large, the engineers were always there. The fireman always showed up, and it was always, you know, there was always steam in the boiler, and an engineer, I mean, there was always heat in the place. And it was fairly efficient. It wasn't quite as efficient as the Catholic schools in terms of sick days and things like that, but it wasn't horrible. And now you get these companies, and you say, I'm going to say if you could call Commonwealth Edison and get some buffoon on the line for 6 months, they're not going under. They've become the new government. I mean, do you think Amazon's going under if they don't give you a return? They don't care. I mean, we're starting to get, as Lou calls it, a very fascist relationship. This government that's bloated, that's dealing with, you know, 15 or 20 or 30 or maybe even 50 preferred firms that are bloated. And they all act the same way. Because there's no competitive. It's not like if I can't get through to Commonwealth Edison, I can call Matt Weber's power company and switch to them. They're the same way. And the governments have figured that out too. I mean, your alderwoman or alderman, or I am an alderwoman, they can be as efficient as all, inefficient as all get out. They got four people that work there. They probably could do with three or two. I mean, does she really need, I mean, I don't know if she has the limo, but she's got the how many, 100,000 or 200,000 a year for her personal expenditures. I mean, do they need all that? It's bloated as hell, Kev. So it's, the businesses are becoming more like government.
I think many businesses are becoming more like government. I don't think all businesses are becoming like government.
But there's areas.
But yes, that nexus between the two is exactly what Lou describes. It is a form of fascism.
Well, I mean, even simple stuff. Audrey, she lives in Orlando. Everybody knows that, and does most of her real estate. Well, she's everywhere in real estate. But behind her is this. Is wetlands kind of thing. There's a little stream that runs through there and creek, I guess. I don't, what's the difference between a creek and a stream? I don't even know, but doesn't a stream flow into a river and a creek? I don't know. But anyway, it's kind of a wetlands thing. Well, somebody donated it, you know, some family to Orland as a native species. You know, we're supposed to be an original wetland. And of course now, after a period of time, the thing has got a bunch of invasive species in it. Some kind of trees dropped in there. So, I won't say my daffy girlfriend, but is out there with a chainsaw cutting down some of the invasive species trees. I mean, what are you doing? A, I don't want you to cut your arm off. And B, you know, why don't you just call Orland? They don't care. What do you mean they don't care? If somebody donated it, there must be a clause in there that says they got to... Well, a few years ago, they were doing a controlled burn, and they bleeped it up so bad they almost burned somebody's house down, so they haven't been back since. So they're just going to let it become totally overgrown with stuff that has nothing to do with the prairie or the wetland. Yeah, they have no interest. None whatsoever. Well, how the hell does that happen, Kevin? We have no interest. What do you mean you have no interest? It's your place. How does that even grow to that point where somebody feels comfortable telling you that on the phone? mean, it's a small thing.
That's the awesome part. Yeah. It's not that it happened. It's just that, hey, this is the way it is now. You know.
But how does it...
Take it or shove it.
How does it grow to that? And it's like when you... when you're paying somebody and they tell you when they quit, I'm paying. I tell you when you quit. What part of this have you missed? Have we gotten wrong here? I mean, does the mayor?
How many times lately have I said when you said how does that happen? And I say very, very slowly and then suddenly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't mean that the governor and the mayor realize that they're the hired help, that they work for everybody else. I mean,
No.
But I mean, this is really. The thing that, obviously, we started off with, I'm looking for the number that when I see it, I got to go short for my people. And so far, I mean, I didn't go short. I was okay the last few days with the stuff down because I got puts for everybody. So, I mean, we're okay. We've maybe lost a little bit. But we're protected and everything. But the point is, I mean, I didn't go short and there was money to be made. Now, what's going to be the signal that says to me, uh-oh, that number is the, you know, there's the canary in the coal mine. And I honestly, with this mess going on and the numbers being as splattered around and some of them being, I think, not even truthful, I'm not sure what to look for here, Kevin, and it bothers me. I sense this whole undercurrent. I mean, half of the economy is in the crap hole, or maybe 45%. I don't see how the other 50 can keep telling you, they can keep peeing on your shoes and tell you it's raining. I don't see that. I mean, and yet, when is it gonna, start getting better before it happens, which I hope, or is it not? I mean, and how are we gonna tell and when, I guess is the question. How's that for a mouthful for you to answer?
Well, the answer is, 7, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know how to answer it. I don't know how bad it has to get, but it has to get bad enough that our choices are, in an election cycle, are interesting and exciting.
Well,
I'm not only half joking with that bumper magnet on my car that says "Giant Meteor 2020."
Well, if we continue where we are now, we're in August, now the election's in November, and I'm not about to pick a direction, although we're trying to, Manny and I are trying to get, we had somebody on 4 years ago that was really good, and we're trying to get them back. So the person doesn't drop in until January, that's assuming this, whoever wins takes over, the other person leaves or stays or whatever, if this thing doesn't drag on. But I'm going to say whatever bad or is going to happen to the point where there's really a problem coming back is going to happen well before January. I mean, either, you know, New York has decided to not have any, that a million people have left or something, or the amount of foreclosures is such a dramatic amount, it doesn't matter if you put Solomon in the Oval Office on January 20th. I mean, we need some answers before then, I guess is the short way of saying it. And I don't know. I don't see us getting them in this political environment. Do you?
No, not on a national level. I do think it's going to be that you're going to be able to look at pockets of the country that are able to self-govern better, and they'll be okay. They'll be affected, but okay. But then you'll find others, and especially major cities. So we're looking at New York, and we're looking at Chicago, we're looking at Los Angeles now, that are, you know, they're totally, their fortunes are totally tied to what's going on nationally and their own bad decisions.
Well, you can't,
and,
but from a business standpoint,
you can't undo, you know, there's no easy undoing for those.
Well, you can't buy, maybe some listener knows, but my brother Dan is an art bicyclist. He spent 3 weeks trying to find a bike. Now, obviously, a lot of the stuff is made in China. Now, the solution would be if Matty Weber and his lovely bride decided, hey, there's no bicycle tubes around. Now, what should happen in a world that's competitive, somebody should say, I can buy these machines that make bicycle tubes. I'm going to start a business, and boy, I could find a spot in, say, Blue Island that's is willing to give me property, and it'll almost give me the old factory, for God's sake. Why don't we get started? Because there's no thought at all that 3 months from now or 2 months from now, you know, Trump isn't going to shake hands with the Chinese and say, we're all back together again. By the way, let's lower the tariffs, and all of a sudden we open the same gates, and the bikes and tubes come flying in from China again, and slave labor.
Yeah, I understand that, Tom, but that's not what's happening right now. What's happening is the opposite. I don't know if you saw Samsung's announcement. They're disengaging all of their television manufacturing out of China over the Uyghur situation and forced labor.
Hey, good for them.
And they're not the only one. There are a number of other companies. U.S. just announced new sanctions related to that situation. But cell phones have been systematically moving out of China. Cell phone manufacturing. Not necessarily Apple yet, but a lot of the smaller cell phone companies left China, gone to India, close enough. India's become a destination of choice. A lot of businesses moving their production to Vietnam. That's still overseas, but it's not China. So I think the other phenomenon that we're seeing is that there are more people bringing, you know, doing technology-based manufacturing in the United States, 3D printing of parts, you know, all of those kinds of things, and starting to do them in quantities so that you will be able to get the same kind of unit cost that you get from the cheap labor in China. And there is a movement for that happening right now.
I absolutely 100% agree with you. All I'm saying is if there was a little more certainty in the policy on a national level, it would make it easier for people to make those investments. Right?
It might.
Well, clearly.
It might. But the ease of making those investments really has much more to do. You know, it's short term, but people have taken the beating on the supply chains now, and I know we have short attention spans when it comes to this kind of stuff. It would not be unusual for people to vow never again, only to again, you know, only to go back to it again as things settle down. And there will be businesses that do that, but there are some, and more than it's a substantial number who are saying, "Ain't doing this anymore."
Yeah, but Samsung, by the way, I agree with you. Some people are trying to do that, but since we managed to have even offshored our own rare earth production because it's too dirty here. As long as China controls 80% or 90% of the rare earth metal, nobody can go anywhere with their cell phone business really without talking to them first, right?
Or yeah. They'll come up with a new way to make cell phones.
If you could come up with a new screen without some of those stuff, that would be nice. I'd love to see it, but I don't. Is it on a drawing board anywhere?
What's the mother of invention?
Yeah, I suppose. But you know what I'm saying is they do control certain parts of the system, and I just hope that our people that are you know running around like roosters understand what they do control and they don't, and how we're going to get around it, right?
I think there is a lot of business leadership that does. They're typically, you know, they're not the people that you see on CNBC.
Yeah, let's hope not.
But well, yeah, agreed. Let's. Although, you know, it's funny. I had Fox Business on this morning. I had Maria Bartiromo's show on. Man, I heard them talking about printing money and you know, what a problem that is. All kinds of things. You know, I heard two, three things. You know, this morning, and I'm going, hey, that's Tom Howe.
I did a long conversation with Maria Bartiromo in Arizona at the swimming pool. She was in a white bikini. Attractive lady. Not that I noticed. And I actually had, you know, enough shape at the time where I was in a bathing suit, which I don't think I would do today. So, just saying, time going by. But she was out there, very pleasant.
Yeah, well, I think Maria could still pull it off.
I think she probably could. Pretty lady and very bright. And
she's, you know, she's a really good interviewer.
Yeah, oh yeah. And she got no end of crap when she was on the New York floor. I mean, just as an aside, before they had, you know, the earpieces and all that stuff for her, they actually would have, if something happened, somebody would run by and like shove a piece of paper in front of her. You know, and say, you know, you know, IBM just announced something, and that was her. So she'd have to read it real quick while she was on camera. I mean, this was not an easy gig. Plus, with the guys down there, were, somebody'd run in front, they'd grab a clerk and say, go give us to her, and it would be a phone number, come meet me in this room tonight. At the Waldorf, yeah. You know, they were.
Did somebody ever, you know, give her something about an announcement from a guy named Hugh Jass?
let's just say I cleaned it up. but I mean, you know what? She's a girl from Jersey. It didn't bother her. She was fine with it. And after a while, when people realized that she wasn't about to melt, then they were okay with her. But she got the serious trading floor introduction, no doubt about that. And but she worked her way through it. I hand it to her. I give her all the accolades in the world. She went into a men's world on a floor where, and she hung in there and gained everybody's respect, and she still has it as far as I'm concerned, at least with me. So, anyway, I like her. So there. Long story short, don't tell it, they say, right? Anyway, SP Futures up 27. Kevin, talked to you on Friday. Short week. We're all scrunched here. SP Futures up 27. NASDAQ Futures up 177. So we're going further up instead of going down, which is nice. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We got Professor Russell Rhodes. Hey, we're putting the whip to it here. S&P futures up 32. NASDAQ futures up 195. So maybe we will take back a little bit of that sell-off yesterday. I don't think we're going to get the whole chunk, but if we get some of it, that would be nice. Maddie, do you have your coffee? I do not have mine.
I just made mine.
Where are you? Where's our coffee? What the hell?
Well, I know. I'm the worst. It's raining. I'm not going out.
Oh God! As my mother used to say, you're not gonna melt.
Why?
Well, you got to go somewhere where we can hear you, for God's sake.
I'm working on it. All right. I'm working on it.
Oh God!
I don't blame him though. It's miserable outside.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah. By the way, wherever you are, in what are you in? Happy suburbia. Last night, I don't know if it made it to your spot. At exactly 2:33. There was a clap of thunder, and I've been around a long time. I've never heard one like this. The duration had to be, 6 seconds, Maddie?
It
sounded like a large truck going by the house.
I thought it was some massive explosion or something.
At our house, it sounded like a bomb.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly. It was like a rumble, like it was coming in or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but it was way longer than any normal clap of thunder.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard of it. So you heard it too. So it made it out to Happy Suburbia, I guess was the question. It wasn't localized.
I think it rolled in from here to there.
Wow. I never really got back to sleep after that. I mean, I kept thinking, what was that? Is that the sign of something? Are there all kinds of people that didn't used to be here all of a sudden on this world that weren't here before or something? It was like the spaceship that came in the day the Earth stood still. Ugh. Anyway. What do you make of the sell-off, and now we're trying to bounce back here a little bit? What do you think?
Well, I mean, you can never time these things, but were we kind of overdue for a little bit of sell-off?
By the way, you still have peeps, shall we say, peeps. What have you heard about, I have not heard boo about this other than I'm tied up with a couple of these places. The decision to raise the margin on Tesla the day before the split, and like they sold off stuff for them. I think Schwab, IB, and a few other places kind of putz the splits and caused a lot of margin calls. It's right when this all started. I wonder if that isn't something that caused it. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, it doesn't take much of a spark to start a fire when all the kindling's dry.
Yeah.
I feel like my redneck.
A
phrase there, but no, and in all seriousness, it really doesn't take a whole lot when it takes a very small catalyst to really start a sell-off, especially when everything is so overvalued the way that it has been.
I haven't checked margin loans lately. Were they at some huge number? They usually are when we get to some kind of a top.
I did not look at those numbers either, but I'm pretty certain that a lot of people were leveraged and very happy about being leveraged.
Yep. It's just so everybody knows, the rates and margin are not, they're not set by individual firms, because the last thing the Fed wants is people to be competing on that basis. So your margin when you start out, if you called somebody at PTI and said, I want to buy 1,000 shares of IBM, well, it's trading 122 right now. That'd be $122,000. So you'd have to send us a check for 61. So your initial margin is 50%.
Yeah.
But if IBM starts to go down, and this is one of the changes made after the 29 crash, you don't have to match dollar for dollar. The next time we call you and say you need more money, it's when your equity has dropped to where you're borrowing 70%. So the maintenance margin is 30, the initial is 50. But firms have the ability to raise that. Since we've never been a clearing firm, we don't do it. PTI, maybe it would be RBC or IB, the two places we clear through.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not so sure. Is there any sort of warning in that or anything? I mean,
I don't think there is.
I don't think there is either, which is a little weird.
And I know that some brokerage firms, changed the margin requirement very quickly back in the spring, which often exacerbates some of the issues that are going on as well. It's just unusual to see them do it when everything's going up.
Yeah.
usually it's a reaction to extra risk. But, you know, Pettifrey over at IV, he's a pretty smart guy. And he, you know, he's going to do what's best for Interactive Brokers. And if, you know, if he thinks there's excess risk in the market and he doesn't want to get left holding the bag, he's going to do something like that.
Well, he got shaved pretty close on the oil stuff.
They've had incidents like that, but just because they attract a really sophisticated type of individual, you know. Even people that can program their own little algorithms and tie into the Interactive Brokers platform.
Oh, yeah, serious stuff.
But I'm going to rephrase that. Or people that think they're very sophisticated.
Yeah.
But because of that, they get caught every once in a while in one of these situations where somebody took on a lot more risk than they could, and they're not going to be able to make good on it. There was one in the oil market, wasn't there?
When they sold,
IB kind of got stuck because it went negative.
Well, they were the sellers.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're. I mean, here's what happens is when you have RBC, obviously all these places are fairly automated. But when we started mm-hmm. the business, I mean, we would all be able to calculate margins. If somebody called and wanted to do a trade, we could calculate the margin like damn near in our head. You know, because we were that good at it. But now, I mean, when you trade online, there's no people doing that. There's all systems, and mm-hmm. and people start to really rely on these systems to the point where at IB, if you've got a 10 lot options that are in the money on a Friday night, they're going to send you an email at 2:00 and say, by the way, you don't have the amount of money to carry that stock, so you know we better you can carry 200 shares, so we better. See, you know, 8 go flying in the next 20 minutes or we're going to do it for you. So mm-hmm. they put their entire faith into this, there's a name for it, that basically covers everybody's margin stuff all online. So if you're driving in your car or someplace and your phone's in the trunk, you're not even going to get this notification. All right, but now at RBC, mm-hmm. we're always going to call you. I mean, it's a different world. But a lot of people don't want to be called anymore. You know, so it's not, a lot of people don't even want a broker anymore for whatever reason. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't. I'm just saying a lot of people don't want it. So what happens is, you may end up being, the idea that you would walk in the morning the day after a split and they sold out some of your Tesla, when you were not even knowing the margin thing went up, you know, that's a shot. I mean, because it might be a tax issue, it might be God knows what. So I mean, that never goes all that well. I think that nobody should be that close to the edge where somebody shouldn't talk to them and say, "Look, here's where you are." But you end up getting so dependent on these things that there reason isn't even like, for instance, the next morning, in a bunch of places, not just we're beating up on IB that we happen to clear through. And they do just about everything pretty darn good. The idea that Russell Rhodes is the president of XYZ Brokerage, and you don't know that, you know, 50,000 margin calls are going out for people. I mean, you're going to say, wait a minute. Well, why would a split create a margin situation? Well, what are we doing? What's wrong? It seems like we're missing that person, damn near at every level of firms, government. I mean, you name it, right? The first thing I would say is, wait a minute, how does a split cause a margin call? It shouldn't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, I think it caused more than just margin calls. I think it caused a lot of issues.
Yeah. Well, then.
You had two big ones at once. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I think, this is maybe slightly out of school, but I think at Schwab, or maybe some other place, might not have been Schwab, they gave you the options one day and the stock the next day. Well, of course, now 3/4 of your options are going to be uncovered because you don't have the stock, right?
Yeah.
So they're all going to show up naked.
Yeah.
So people are having a 20 lot covered right on are getting $1 million margin call. You know, because the options hit one day and then the stock hit the next. Well, I mean, we've been doing stock splits since 1980, since I've been here. How are we screwing up?
We haven't had a whole lot of them lately. We haven't had a really high profile one.
Well, 4-1, 5-1's a lot too.
And I actually think that what you just said, that the increased reliance on the technology and just assuming that the computers are going to take care of it, it's catching up with you every once in a while.
When it's big money, when it does. I mean, I don't know how many arbitrations are going to come out of this one, you know, but we'll see.
To be fair, we've named a couple of firms. A lot of firms had trouble around. It was a industry-wide thing. So,
which you really have to wonder, does everybody buy their software from the same place? And it's no good? That could be, too.
It's very much of a possibility that the back end of those things are very similar, and the front end just looks a little different.
Well, you also might have gagged on the amount of strikes, right?
That does not help.
No.
No, it does not. There's one problem that I am glad that I am not in charge of solving, and it's how to make, at an option exchange or an option brokerage firm, how to make sure the software is continuing to keep up with all the numbers changing all the time that they have to keep up with.
Well, the idea of having the minimum amount of people making markets at the same time you expand the strikes, you expand the strikes by like 100-fold. To me, what possibly could go wrong there, Russell?
One person oversleeps and it ruins the whole system. It's a domino effect.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, weren't going to oversleep last night. 2:30.
Somebody overslept and now you don't have coffee. See how the cause and effect is?
Absolutely. And then, Maddie might be grumpy. He may say something to his lovely bride the day after his birthday.
Oh, my God.
She took him out to a nice dinner, and she's going to
Am I going to cause another divorce?
God. How many have you caused so far? Yeah, I got a good one regarding regarding the Audrey was telling me. Audrey has the heart of gold, so she has all these people that she sold houses to, and if they're, especially if they downsize, and there are a lot of them are older ladies, widows, and so forth. Well, she keeps in contact with them because a lot of times, this day and age, family doesn't, you know, which is really, really kind of screwy. I mean, you know, I saw my mom once or twice a week her entire life. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, when I just moved to L.A. and just never saw her again kind of thing. But so she's got this one lady who was living in her house. She's fine. I mean, she could do that. But she goes, you know, all my friends are in this assisted living, you know, and I'm here by myself. I can't really drive anymore. Audrey take her out to lunch one day a week. She goes, I might as well go to where my, you know, my friends are. So she lands there like a week before the COVID.
Okay.
And she's fine. She's got her own little apartment and everything. Well, they've got her on total lockdown in her apartment.
Yeah.
Which is, so she's a feisty old thing, I'll say that for her. So once a day, she tells, actually twice a day, she says she walks down the hall, which she's not supposed to. Ooh. Says who's ever on duty, you know, I've been in jails. I've been in jails with more freedom than this place. And by the way, the food was better. and evidently, she and another one of her ilk. You can see why these ladies found guys that dug them, because anybody who's got that kind of backbone. She got another lady friend that she finds, and they each go down separate fire escape stairwells between shifts and sneak out the back door and sit outside. They found two chairs for an hour before they hightail it back in and don't get caught.
That's fantastic.
Can you imagine having to do that at that age because somebody won't let you talk to the person in the apartment next door to you?
No.
I mean, I can't.
I cannot imagine that, you should reach a point in your life where nobody tells you what to do anymore.
Yeah. And,
you know what I mean? That should be one of the end of life rewards that you get. And my father's biggest fear was ending up in one of those situations.
He
stayed in his house till the bitter end.
Now, why does it bother me that the governor's family owns a bleep load of nursing homes and he's making these kind of rules?
Because there's all kinds of conflicts of interest everywhere in the world, and that one, you know, there's another one for you. Does it cost him more or less if they do a lockdown?
I'm going to say that if you don't let people from the outside in to check on their family, who's your advocate? Who knows if somebody's got a... I'm not saying they do. Who knows how bad the food is? Who knows if somebody's got a black eye? The thought of me not being able to see my mother or stepfather for 5 months I didn't want to pick them up. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I couldn't even. That's inhuman.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet we're putting up with it. Why?
Because everybody thinks that's the thing that we're supposed to do to make sure we get back to what might be a normal life. And I don't know if I agree with, you know, I don't know if I agree with that or not.
The people I know, some people who are involved in nursing homes, and virtually every time somebody got it, it wasn't from a family member, it was from somebody who worked at the place.
Yeah, and usually, I assumed it was it was probably staff that.
And usually the staff came from a hospital as moonlight.
Ha.
Anyway, so
that really doesn't surprise me at all.
All right, so Russell, now that you're here being an economics professor, I was just talking to Kevin, and I was asking him the question I'm going to ask you. As somebody who's looking, you know, looking for major changes, in the markets and the interest rates and those kinds of things. Because, you know, I can set my people up for a huge run if I catch the bottom on the rates or if I do something, which I'd love to do, obviously. And I see the market or the economy slash market. The economy, I see 40% of it, maybe as high as 50% of it, where people are off to $600 now for what, 4 weeks? Mm-hmm. The numbers are going to start changing pretty dramatically because people who were living pretty much as well as when they were working, maybe even a little better in some cases, now clearly are not. Some of them have made it back to work. Most of them have not. So now we've got this undercurrent here that nobody really wants to talk about of the low end. And you also have people that have been fired from jobs that are making, you know, 70 grand a year that are working at Home Depot for 10 bucks an hour or 11. So you've got that thing going where there's no way they're making the mortgages. I just saw yesterday that 7.1% of the mortgages in the country did not get paid last month, which is a big number. I mean, I don't know what it normally is, but seven's high. So my question is, in the pantheon of big-time numbers that we get, what should I be looking for that says this is the day? That all of a sudden, economy A is encroaching on economy B, and economy B can't soft sell it anymore. It's coming. I mean, you know, the guy sitting at CNBC can't tell you that there's nothing wrong in the world. What's the indication to me or you that's happening? And hopefully we never get it, that actually the bottom half heals itself and people go back to work. But I just see week after week it just get pushed out.
Amazon sales.
You think so?
Yeah. At first, I was initially I was going to say retail sales, but Amazon sales or low end dining sales, like, you know, I know if you see a further drop off in like McDonald's sales or things like that, but very low end discretionary stuff.
When
but you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, so absolutely.
As far as, well, I guess, you know.
Right, that brings another question then. Every answer brings a question. Mm-hmm. When does what numbers should we be looking at? Because Kenny Pulcheri was on yesterday talking about the Bellagio saying that they're not going to open up inside restaurants till like next June, which I'm like, I had no idea he was thinking about that. In Chicago, Palmer House suing not to pay their mortgage. When are we going to see if we see this cavalcade of people not paying their rent, looking to weasel out, or get out, maybe someplace not paying their mortgage, tax bills, people are sending half the money. When is the New York, Chicago, maybe LA, downtown office, you know, fiasco, where's that going to show up? And is some bank going to go under? I mean, I don't know. I'm asking.
I think you'd probably see it first in the REITs, in the office REITs, before it hits the banks. But, you know, it hit the banks pretty quickly after that. I know that I can relate this to housing because I've traded through a couple of housing through a couple of housing downturns, including the 2008 one, which the firm I was at mistimed by just a few months, which can kill you. But you know, if it follows that same pattern, you'll see it in the commercial related REITs first, and then it will hit the banks, because the banks you know, will have 120, 180 days before they really have to take an official hit on or on what the loss was. They may start anticipating what their losses will be relative to their loans, but they'll get hit second.
Well, Russell, who
in the housing, it's the home builders and then the home mortgage company.
Russell, who exactly? I mean, this is an area that I don't know. I mean, we say banks, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been told, but I mean, who actually holds the mortgage on an insurance exchange building, on a board of trade building? Of course, they didn't have to have a mortgage because they owned the place, but they went out and got a mortgage, or they sold to somebody who got a mortgage, or 440 or something.
I mean, who leveraged themselves up. Yeah,
and I'm saying who is it a private capital places? I mean, I can't.
I think there are some private equity firms that you know are involved in you know that sort of lending. You know, that's actually an area that is somewhat, if not as transparent as other lending markets, but you know, a lot of different investment firms and mostly hedge funds have been taking advantage of how they have access to cheap money and getting involved in the loan market, where they leverage up what they're able to borrow and loan it out to other entities. And I wonder if we're going to see any of those types of firms get hit.
Well, that's what I was saying. I doubt very seriously.
And that's a market that Goldman Sachs was involved in. And I want to say about a year or year and a half ago, Goldman said, we're getting out of this. Which, and that's before the pandemic.
How do you get out of it if you got a...
Well, no, you just don't make any new loans.
Okay, but I mean, you still got...
We're not doing this anymore. Yeah, and then maybe they sell off the rest of the business to somebody else. I don't know. But
because somebody told me it was on the air.
Banks like that are doing it.
I don't know, we had a guest, and I kept using the word banks, and somebody said, "Chief, you're screwing this up. There's no way that you can trace the mortgage on like the insurance exchange building or the board of trade right across the street to Citigroup or something. They don't hold that anymore. It's all these private companies that's what they do. They finance this stuff. They go out and raise money and finance these places. And I mean, but how do you? It's like the movie The Big Short. I don't think there's a way you and I could ever have shorted a basket of mortgage securities that was assembled in house at Morgan, unless we just shorted Morgan.
No, we couldn't have done that. You could have shorted the mortgage related stocks, because I did. We were not successful. We were like a year and a half early, and they kept going up longer than anybody felt like they should. Like we missed with the timing, but we had the whole theory right. We just were early, which leads me to believe that the economic fallout from this thing, even if the world starts to get better and we get close to some sort of normalcy by the end of the year, there's still a reckoning that we are not out of the woods.
Well, you just said exactly what I'm hunting for. It seems to me that the slope is sliding lower here, and yet we haven't seen it yet, and may not for a while. But it's there. There's a whatever you want to call it. There's gonna be a payment to be made here someplace. I just can't figure out where it's gonna go first.
Right now, it's not going to happen while the pandemic's going on, because you know we've got a huge safety net in the form of the government doing things to make sure that at least on the company side we're all right.
If you think
about the lack of the extension of benefits, it's because companies were having a difficult time finding workers because everybody was getting free money. Now things are suddenly good for the companies once again, and maybe getting people to go back to work, but not 100% sure of that. But I hadn't thought of it from this standpoint, and that's why I'm kind of stalling around, but I think if I had to try to get an indication of the long-term repercussions of this, you know, if we're going to have some sort of behavioral change where more and more people order stuff from Amazon and order things like in that manner, you know, I would want to see what happens with respect to how much Amazon activity there is, and if it's dropping off at Amazon, is it going back to traditional retailers or is it just disappearing because people, you know, because people don't have as much money to spend? And I would focus in on the, you know, I'd focus in on the Walmart sales, maybe the Target sales a little bit, fast food companies, if it's not picking back up from where it is right now. I mean, I know they're at a much lower level. I went into my McDonald's that usually had maybe 100 people in the morning and there were like 3. But if those types of things don't come back, that means that, you know, people don't have two nickels to rub together anymore.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to, somewhere along the line here, the Fed's going to run out of gas. I've got us calculated very roughly that we've gone through 4 years of taxation. I don't call payroll taxes taxation because that goes right into the areas that they're still paying. So I don't see how you steal that. But if you look at just the income tax, I don't see how in the hell we're talking about. Well, let's talk about it after the break. SP futures up 30, NASDAQ futures up 152. So we're making a stab here at a comeback. We hope it keeps going. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody. It's Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 28.75. We've been up all morning. Started about 20, made it to like 32, and now we're 28.50. NASDAQ up 156. We've got the Dow up 191. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 152. That's 1.1%. These guys were all down yesterday. FTSE up 57. That's up full 1%. CAC around up 34.7%. Over in Asia, these guys were up when everybody else was down later. So now we're going the other way. Nikkei down 241, that's 1%. Shanghai down 61, that's 1.9%. Hang Seng only down 0.6%, that's 155 points. Just as a way of review, yesterday Dow down 632, S&P down 95, NASDAQ down 465. It was 4.1%. That's a huge move in one day. Huge. Bonds, 10-year yield 0.68, right where it's been. Bund minus 0.47, Japan positive 0.02. Oil, which took a huge hit yesterday, is bouncing back a little bit today, but they're down like 5% yesterday. Up 64 cents, that's 1.7%. 37.40 was 42 last week, so still down a chunk. Brent down 38 cents at 40.16. Natural gas, 2.42. RBOB up 1 cent to 111. And gold, we've got down 750 to 1935, but it's still higher than the quote we gave yesterday at 1922. Silver down 20 cents, 26.78. Copper still over $3 at 302. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still looking good on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. You'll run into some brake lights on the inbound Kennedy as you're approaching the circle, but no major delays. Outbound side looks okay. Eden's looking good, as is the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Lakeshore Drive looking good, too. Only crash in the area is out in the western suburbs. It looks like Route 83 at Hodges Road. There is an accident. Weather today, lots of clouds, similar to yesterday, rain on and off, a high of 66. Right now it's overcast and 61 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 91 today. Right now it's clear and 70. In sports, the Cubs are 3 games up on the Cardinals. They shut out the Reds last night 3-0 at Wrigley. White Sox lost to the Pirates in Pittsburgh 5-4. They're now tied with the Indians atop the AL Central and a half game up on the Minnesota Twins. So three teams within a half a game in the AL Central. Diamondbacks are in last place. They lost again last night to the Dodgers 10-9. Chief.
So what do you think? The Cubbies, what happened to the Yankees, which was supposed to be the best team? They're on the eighth seed now or something?
They're 5-15 in their last 20 games. They've just completely tailspinned, and they're back to 500 somehow when everyone thought they were on a collision course with the Dodgers to play in the World Series. And now, yeah, they're barely going to squeak into the playoffs, and if they keep playing at this rate, they may miss it altogether. Pretty crazy. They're in third place in the AL Central.
Behind
the Tampa Bay Rays are 28-15, and then 3.5 back are the Blue Jays at 24-18. The Yankees are at 500, 6.5 back, 21-21.
There's still some wild cards, though, right?
Well, yeah, the first place and second place team of each division are in, and then two wild cards. So right now they are still holding a wild card spot, one of the final two wild card spots.
That's interesting. I think
it's almost like hockey.
Yeah.
It is
over
yeah.
half the teams are going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, and right now it'd be the National League. It would be Braves and Phillies out of the East, Cubs and Cardinals out of the Central, Dodgers and Padres out of the West, and then the wild card teams you'd have the Giants and the Marlins.
The Marlins, wow,
yeah, they're 19-18.
How did those guys get a team again all of a sudden?
Yeah, well, they're just like the Cardinals. They didn't play for a couple weeks, and they've just been hanging around one game above 500 now and playing a ton of doubleheaders and just playing good ball, and they're right in the thick of it.
It's,
I think that ton of doubleheader thing has helped the Cardinals, too.
Yeah.
I grew up a Cardinal fan, so that you know, just acknowledging something there. But I think splitting a doubleheader is just almost more commonplace than, you know, splitting two separate days.
They seem to split almost every doubleheader, although they did sweep the Cubs on Saturday.
And that'll keep you, around 500.
Yep.
And that's all you need to get in the playoffs this year.
That's right. Yeah, they're 18-17. They've won 6 out of 10. They're 3 games behind the Cubs.
Which shows you they have a little bit of depth in their minor league system, too. And some of those pitchers. They always have, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Dodgers still, though, are far and away the best team. 31-12. They're the best record in all of baseball. They're going to be the number one seed in the National League, and they're going to be the team to beat. But they kind of have been the last few years, and they haven't been able to get it done. So,
well, the Cubs were huge underdogs last night. Cincinnati.
Yeah, going against a good pitcher with a rookie, but yeah. Mills outdueled them.
Yeah. They were minus. Well, they were 1.5 point dogs. Run one dog. The Sox were big favorites.
And they lost.
Which is, because the pitcher they were going against, what, at a 6.7 run average or something going against the Sox, and he ended up winning.
Yeah, the Pirates are 14-26. They're not very good. But they've been playing a little bit better over the last, like, 15 games. They played the Cubs tough. Even though the Cubs won 5 out of 6 against them, all the games except one were very close.
Now, they're not going to do the reseeding like hockey every round, are they?
I don't think so. I don't know that for sure, though.
That sure makes it tough. It's almost impossible to come up from the bottom if you got to play everybody, the best seed every single time.
Yep.
That's yeah. It's interesting, Russell. What you brought up earlier, kind of changing gears, that even if everything looks like it's getting back together, it may not. It might be a delayed hit on the economy. I keep looking at this debt clock thing, and the income tax revenue of the federal government is $1.5 trillion, right? Payroll tax $1.1 trillion, but you know that's already being used.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've already went. We're up to what, 4, 5, or 6 this year, right? That we've essentially paid out, and now we've got every state saying they need more and more and more. Every industry saying they need more and more and more. I got us out 4 years of tax receipts.
Mm-hmm.
How many years can we go on that?
Well, if they print money, we can go forever. It's just going to hit us in another way.
Right.
You know, yeah. Which is, honest to God, I don't know what's worse. I think that, you know, there's going to be a day of reckoning in all this, and it's going to come a lot farther out than any of us would guess, because I think you and I would have thought it already would have happened, even without a pandemic.
Well, yes, I've been early as well, as usual, but tempered a little bit by how long it took the last time for inflation to take a hold. It really started, I'm going to say, late 60s, and didn't really become a thing till 5 or 6 years later. and it took the same time on the ass end of it, when Volcker was squeezing the inflation out. I think he could have stopped and should have stopped 18 months before he did, and I think he could have saved some savings and loans and wouldn't have had as big of a fiasco with the Resolution Trust and all the other stuff. I think that there's a huge lag time to this, especially with the numbers the way these guys have them. And, you know, I don't... I think that they have to be real careful because, like you say, the lag time is huge.
Yeah, you know, the analogy that I sit here and think of with respect to all of this is Bernie Madoff. And he was fine doing what he was doing. I mean, he wasn't fine, but he was able to get away with it until, you know, all the other stuff around him was falling apart and people needed their money.
Yeah, yeah.
And we could keep doing, you know, and the things that we've been doing to keep things going along are great as long as the economy is operating at some sort of normalcy, even, you know, even a small recession. But when you get the brakes halted like we did, and, you know, yeah, and now the transmission is shut, so we're just kind of barely making it to the service station. It's going to be a big bill on the back end, and it always takes longer than anybody expects.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, but and I'm wondering in the big scheme of history, when you and I are both long gone, if they're going to look back at, you know, 2008 through 2020 as one big long event, kind of like we look at the you know, the depression as 29 through 40, but or 41, I guess, until we got into the war. I wonder if it's going to be the same sort of context where, you know, that we had a decade plus of the rich getting richer, the poor, you know, they're becoming more of a division, and, you know, the economics actually being attributed to, you know, the kind of social disruption we have going on right now. I wonder if, you know, all of it's going to be grouped together as one big, big, big problem. And we're just looking at, we're in the middle of it, so we're not seeing the forest for the trees, or however you put that.
I would say that you could make a huge correlation. Of course, there's always differences between the 20s and lead from, say, 21, where they had this sort of mini recession. Agriculture never came back. When I say that, it's not like today. Agriculture was a big percentage of the economy. Agriculture was already in a depression, and the money was being made by less and less people. So most of the statistics you read, and I'm not so sure about this actual right today, Russell, but the highest percentage of wealth in the top 1% of people was, what, the month before the 29 crash?
I'm sure it was.
I mean, you know, could you group the entire, clearly if you were in agriculture, the years 20 to 41, 29 didn't make things that much worse for you, or 32 really, you know, somewhat probably.
Well, I mean, it created so much deflation that, you know, you're better off just dumping stuff on the side of the road as opposed to taking it to market.
Right. Right. Well, but I mean, that was already happening in the 20s.
Right.
And, but I'm saying right now, you know, the whole, I mean, if you look here, I'm looking at the debtclock.org, which, you know, I shouldn't, but I mean, you look at, in 2000, median income was 30,806. Now it's right, up it a little bit. I think these guys are a little low. But it's 36. So we're talking 20 years, and you're up 20%. And, you know, even the ridiculous inflation is up 50. But the stuff we talk, I mean, new homes, 322 now and 166 then. So the person here at the median income level, he's been beaten up the whole way. I mean, with the hospitalization, education, home prices, I mean, you name it. I mean, the TVs, TVs have gone down. You know, and cell phones have gone down. Probably Nehru jackets have gone down, but nobody needs them to go to work now anyway. So it's a. But I mean, you know, you're looking at the same thing you're talking about. It's a question of when all of a sudden does the people realize, hey, we're going the wrong way. And I don't know how government at this level, because I've got, you know, a lot of people I write back and forth with, and I honestly believe that it's a. If you look at every walk of life now, it's, I don't know what's happened to our education system or something, but I don't really see, when I was in MBA school, Russell, it was always a thing at the University of Chicago. They'd say, you know, you're an analyst, you try and do the best job you can so you can be seen by upper management, to get your report to upper management, to try and do a good job. And the idea always was, if you get away from the layers above you a little bit and made it higher up the chain, there would be somebody or somebodies, that I use the Jewish term, there'd be a mensch or something, or a Renaissance man or whatever. There'd be somebody who could look at your work and say, God, I don't know where this Russell guy is, but this is pretty damn good. And by the way, this kid's right. You know, or some, I mean, there'd be somebody somewhere in every organization that belonged where he was, you know, that actually had a few marbles working up there, and he would, there's going to be somebody like that. But now, you look at the stuff we've talked about. We don't seem to be able to handle a split. We're selling oil less than zero. I mean, you wonder, are these people just not recognized? I mean, you don't see anybody in government, I mean, that I can see, that says, here's a blue jean place, and they're closed, but by the way, Target's selling blue jeans, that's not right, and change the policy. Doesn't seem like we have anybody, or maybe it's the media that's done it to people, maybe it's the Twitter, maybe you can't change your mind, you're flip. I don't know what it is, but it seems like the normal, let's get 15 people together in Congress or someplace and sit down and say, hey, look, this isn't going so hot, what can we do? Nobody even dreams of that happening, Russell. And I don't know how much further we can go at any level without some reversion to common sense here. Be it education, be it the market, be it any place. I mean, are you seeing something?
Well,
go ahead.
It takes something to push us all back together.
Well, what do we need?
You know what and typically, and you know, and this is where the conspiracy people get all excited. But typically, it's some sort of common enemy. You know, I have a funny feeling that, you know, back in the 20s, that, you know, there was a lot of resentment from the average guy walking down the street to look over at Gatsby driving down the street, you know, and something that costs more than, you know, 5 years of their salary. You know, I'm certain that there was, you know, I'll use a phrase you've used before, the unwashed masses that were not participating in all the fun in the 20s were getting angrier and angrier as time went by. And, you know, we needed a common enemy that was affecting everybody. The Depression might have been the common enemy. Eventually it became World War II that sort of got everybody together and we started to focus on a common enemy. And now it's China, I guess.
Well, Trump's surely trying to do that.
Yeah, I mean, everybody thinks that. I can't ever figure out if Trump is really just all over the place, kind of like I am this morning, or if he really, if a lot of the things that he's doing are better thought out than we'll give him credit for.
Well, we
could debate that one for an hour, but
well, I think that they're well, I guess whatever people tell him is his strong point he's going after. Okay, in other words, I mean, I think that his, actually I read 18 months ago that his that people think he's a lot stronger on China. People, you know, they've decided to hate China for a lot of reasons, and he's a lot stronger on that than the Democrats. And one of the reasons why the China has gotten to this spot is because the Democrats are a bunch of weenies on them through the years. Now, I don't think Bush was any harder on them, but either Bush.
I'm saying
it doesn't matter whether it's a fabrication or not. The point is, but clearly he's working that order to use that he's pushing of the fact that he's spring. You know what a Duesenberg cost in 1930?
A Duesenberg?
Yeah, we talk about individual cars like Jay Gatsby, but they were close to $10,000.
Oh my goodness!
That's a real number.
Yeah. No, and you know what? I mean, most people are probably not aware of this, but and I'm not doing it for myself, but we're probably going to need a third car in the Rhodes household, and I've already bought a new second one for somebody that's getting ready to turn 16. But because when I do have to go downtown, I will not be taking the train. I'm looking for a third car, and I was absolutely shocked at the number of cars that you can buy over here on Ogden Avenue near my house that cost over $100,000 right now.
They got a Jeep coming out to $100,000.
Yeah. If you need a car, you can get a car that'll get you from point A to point B for a reasonable price at, you know, CarMax or something like that. You really can. But there, you can almost see the wealth gap by looking at the car market and the fact that, you know, that they're still selling, you know, $110,000 Escalades around the corner from my house. pretty regular basis.
Audrey's cousin has an auto dealership out way southwest. I won't name the town, but it's, you know, way to help past Joliet, right? And he, on the lot, he has, he either can sell, he can always sell pickup trucks, right, out there.
Mm-hmm.
But on the lot, he either has stuff for $5,000 or he can put a real fancy vet or a BMW convertible, because there's a real rich enclave out there too. And one of the ends will sell. But if you have stuff on there that comes off lease, like a real nice 2-year-old car that's $17,000, $15,000, ain't happening. There's nobody. Mm-hmm. There's nobody in the middle. You either own a place or you work at the place. And the guys with the $5,000 are struggling to get financing, and the guys with the $50,000 are paying cash.
Yeah,
and it's exactly what you're talking about. I could see even you, if you drove around in a Duesenberg, I think would have a date for a night.
Even me, I could. Yeah. We can find a young lady that likes the sweater vest.
That she liked the car. Just saying.
Yeah, I know. Oh
yeah,
I'll get in the car, sir, but lose the vest.
Yeah. Did you ever
hear that right now?
When you drive through northern Indiana, if you ever do, if you get near Fort Wayne and you have a day to kill.
Mm-hmm.
I would absolutely recommend the Auburn Duesenberg Cord Museum in Auburn, Indiana. And hence the name Auburn.
Duesenberg.
But those cars were, you walk in, even you will be stunned at the automotive history. There used to be 27 auto manufacturers in Indiana in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
They were coachmakers, and you'd buy the steering from some guy, and you buy the motor from another guy, and pretty soon you had your own car. And but the interesting part was, these guys sold, I don't know what the number was, they sold 30,000 cars in like 1929 and 1930. They sold like 5,000.
Yeah,
but here was a place
fell off.
But here was a place, and this is the lesson, the really horrible lesson, that when we go into an economic thing like we have now, this is the kind of stuff that really really rankles me. Is that all of a sudden these guys, they were in the middle of basically a cornfield, Indiana. They start building these cars, and all of a sudden they got all these people working there from the farms, and now it was classic economics, where some guy who was good at, you know, growing corn for everybody, he grew corn for everybody else's farm, and the other five guys went to work at the plant. And these cars were absolutely spectacular. I don't know which I like better, the Auburns or the Duesenbergs. And Cords were right there too. So they're being built in there, and all of a sudden the Depression comes. These place goes out of business. Government didn't, you know, do anything to save anybody. And all of a sudden, there's never been a car made. The factory is a museum, and nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It never came back. And that's why that's the risk we're running right now, Russell. And I think it's more than a risk. I mean, you don't lose, you know, 30,000 restaurants and not have a gaping hole. I mean, you just that's where 50,000 people, 100,000 people used to work and own and enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more
and
than
you've got, you know, out here, and I know that you're starting to see the same thing in Chicago, but out here, you've got full strip malls that were half empty before all this happened that are just empty now.
Yeah, well, what's going to happen to those places?
They're probably going to bulldoze them over and turn them into old folks' home.
I guess. But yeah, it's
they had the largest mall in my hometown, the one I used to hang out at. They renamed it from the Mall of Memphis to the Mall of Murder because there was so much crime in the parking lot, and so then they shuttered it. They talked about turning it into a jail, which I didn't think was the worst idea in the world, just because what else can you do with a big space like that? But the strip mall-y type of space, why can't you let people go, you know, repurpose them a little bit and let people go live in there?
Well, I mean, it would be an idea. Well, that's what they're doing with places like these old big malls. Is there, mm-hmm. they're trying to put up an apartment complex and some restaurants and a couple stores, maybe even a hotel. They're trying to put a big fitness facility. I mean, something like that. You're trying to repurpose the whole place. I mean, what else? I mean, you have to try and do something, right?
Yeah. Make them into a giant paintball place.
Oh God! Well, I think that's you can bust it up for a movie out of the Dixie Square Mall in Blues Brothers, right?
Yeah, we go drive. Let's go drive. You and I should go put on black hats and dark sunglasses and go driving through one of these empty malls for the hell of it.
banging through the front of it. But that place was, I wonder how much they had to put the glass and the products and stuff back in the stores. It was already empty.
They had to rebuild it.
They had to sort of rebuild the inside so they could wreck it. That's wild. SP Futures up 28 and NASDAQ Futures up 152. Russell, thank you very much. Matt Weber, thank you. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.